So it's Thursday, January 16th, 2020. This is module 27 on Lojong. And this is class number 5. And it's slogan 28. So it's just all numbers. It's going to be Kabbalah instead of Tibetan Buddhism. So, how about you start? So, okay. Slogan, I said slogan 28, not what it is, because in fact, what we found is a look through a whole bunch of, I didn't realize quite how many books I had on this.
You want me to hand these around?
Not yet.
All right.
And we found, I think, 4 or 5 different ways that the slogan has been expressed. So why don't you read this?
Okay, I'm going to pass this.
No, you're going to read them. You're just going to read the slogans.
Okay. The slogan number 28 is...
So the first one, just like read each one.
Okay. Send away any hope for results.
And then have those things.
Okay, the next one is abandon any hope of fruition. Give up any hope for results. Give up all hope for results. Abandon any hope of fruition. And I think that's it.
Well, I think abandon. So there's several different ways people have expressed it. And what we did is we sat down and we went through the different books, and what we found is sort of a clip from each of them. Some of them the clip is the whole thing because it's short, and some of them the clip is not the whole thing because it was long. So I'm going to share those out.
These
to take. Yep.
All yours. If you're lucky, you might be in the middle and you'll get
It's actually before you start reading, we wrote down our notes and then I forgot. Is to just sort of, having heard those different versions or even just looking at what the versions say, just sort of spend a minute thinking for yourself about it. We're not going to actually share out about that, but just sort of what that made you think of or what that inspired. Any version. So we're going to go around and read these excerpts, take turns reading them, and just asking people to sort of notice, the same way a lot of times when you hear the Dharma, you can hear the same thing said slightly different ways. And some of them you're like, yeah, whatever. And then suddenly you hear one and you think, oh, now I understand something I didn't get before. So just to sort of listen to each one and does it catch you, or are you like, yeah, sure, whatever, or now I've seen the light, I totally understand my whole life, or anywhere in between.
So we're going to
go around and read a paragraph out loud at a time.
You start?
Okay, so I'm going to start off and we'll go around to the mindfulness next. So this is from Tenshin Thrangul Rinpoche, The 7 Points of Mind Training. That might be the one I just got. I haven't read much of it. Send away any hope for results. Giving up hope has to do with thinking that we are gaining some nice results from mind training. We're able to be more kind and compassionate to others, less selfish, and so forth. But then we may hold in the back of our mind that if we are good, people will be nice in return. We have some expectation of being rewarded for being a good person and having a good heart. Or we could expect, as I become a better practitioner, others will know me for being so. They will respect me, and I will become important in some way. Or maybe we think about good results later on. For example, I will get something important out of this at some point. Of course, it is not the case that we won't. There is a definite consequence of practice that ripens as a result. In the context of mind training, we give up all hope for results. So, Michael, if you could just read the next paragraph. We'll just do a paragraph at a time.
Down to...
Maybe the first two.
Read the
short.
First two.
Yeah, they're
this
short.
Bunch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Our next slogan is, abandon any hope of fruition. You could also say, give up all hope, or give up, or just give. The shorter, the better. One of the most powerful teachings of the Buddhist tradition is that as long as you are wishing for things to change, they never will. As long as you're wanting yourself to get better, you won't. As long as you have an orientation towards the future, you can never just relax into what you already have or already are.
One of the deepest habitual patterns that we have is to feel that now is not good enough. We think back to the past a lot, which maybe was better than now or perhaps worse. We also think ahead quite a bit to the future, which we may fear, always holding out hope that it might be a little bit better than now. Even if now is going really well, we have good health and we've met the person of our dreams, or we just had a child or got the job we wanted, nevertheless, there's a deep tendency always to think about how it's going to be later. We don't quite give ourselves full credit for who we are in the present.
For example, it is easy to hope that things will improve as a result of meditation, that we won't have such bad tempers anymore, or we won't have fear anymore, or people will like us more than they do now. Or maybe none of those things are problems for us, but we feel we aren't spiritual enough. Surely we will connect with that awake, brilliant, sacred world that we are going to find through meditation. In everything we read, whether it's philosophy or Dharma books or psychology, there's an implication that we're caught in some kind of very small perspective, and that if we just did the right things, we'd begin to connect with a bigger world, a vaster world, different from the one we are now.
Give up any hope for results. Give up the hope of subduing gods and demons by meditating on mind training, or the hope that you will be considered a good person when you try to help someone who has hurt you. These are hypocritical attitudes. In a word, give up all hope for any result that concerns your own welfare, such as the desire for fame, respect, happiness, and comfort in this life, the happiness experienced in the human or God realms in future lives, or the attainment of nirvana for yourself.
You want to read Brian, or you want to skip? You didn't get the handout?
No, give Chris's stamp.
Give up all hope for results. This slogan may sound foreign to Western ears, but it has a long history in Buddhist thinking. The Lojong teachings say that whenever we become obsessed with results, we spend our time trying to manipulate the outcome of our endeavor instead of paying attention to the activity itself. Even though we have no real idea what the result will be, we project a picture of picture-perfect vision of our expectations into the future. Want me to keep reading?
Yeah.
This distracts us from doing the task at hand and usually ends in frustration and disappointment because the imagined result is never the same as the eventual outcome. Thus, we shouldn't concern ourselves with what benefits we're achieving from our mind training, but should simply focus on our practice with sincerity. For how we engage in the practice is what will determine the end result.
You know, Harry Bob, if you can wait, I realize for the new people that we didn't do a good explanation of what Phobojang is. And so the idea, this is a list set of 59 pithy expressions that are supposed to help you focus on becoming a more compassionate person. So instead of having a long thing, you just have this little thing to remember, and then you can do the right thing. And so it's a whole series of things. So you can, there's lots of different ways people use this practice in order to become more compassionate. So even people have, you can get a set of cards and pick randomly or pick with purpose a card to put up. You just sort of have out to think about, to remind yourself. You know, like a lot of other things people use to just remind yourself to be doing the right thing. Harry Bob, can you do
abandon any hope of fruition. This slogan means that you should give up possibilities of becoming the greatest person in the world by means of your training. In particular, you may quite impatiently expect that because of Lojong practice, you will become a better person. You may be hoping that you will be invited to more little clubs and gatherings by your proteges or friends who are impressed with you. The point is that you have to give up any such possibility. Otherwise, you could become an egomaniac. In other words, it is too early for you to collect disciples. That's it.
Cultivating insight and equanimity supports what is most distinctive and powerful about spiritual activism. The Bodhisattva acts without attachment to the results of action. Aphorism 28 of the Tibetan Lojong training offers a classic formulation. Abandon any hope of fruition. Don't get caught up in how you will be in the future. Stay in the present moment.
Can you do that?
I refer to spiritual activism rather than Buddhist activism because this principle is also an essential part of karma yoga in the most important Hindu text, the Bhagavad Gita. Your right is to the work, never to the fruits. Be neither motivated by the fruits of action nor inclined to give up action.
Yet acting without attachment is easily misunderstood, suggesting a causal attitude. Yes, our local power company needs to convert from coal to renewables. We organized and protested for a while, but there was a lot of resistance. It just didn't work. But that's okay, because what's important are the intentions behind our actions, not the results. That approach will never bring about the changes that are necessary, because it misses the point about what non-attachment really means.
The spiritual path isn't about coming to understand everything, but opening up to experience a sacred and mysterious world where everything is changing, whether or not we notice. Bodhisattvas access this mystery by not grasping it, in order to rest serenely in it, but in being taken by it. They manifest something greater than their egos. Our task is to do the very best we can, not knowing what the consequences will be, not knowing if our efforts will make any difference whatsoever.
So six very different, not totally different, but different ways of sort of playing with what this is about. And one other thing I did want to explain is the term bodhisattva. So one of the parts of the path in Buddhism is, what first part might be just, I wish I could be liberated. I wish I could be free from my suffering. It's really unpleasant. I don't like it. And the next step can be, everyone is suffering. And I wish everyone could be released from that suffering. And it's actually more important that I work to do that. And so people who come to that in their study, in their travel on the path, can take a vow called the Bodhisattva vow to make that commitment. That I will stay and through as many lifetimes as it takes until everyone is free from their suffering. And this study is a little part of that Bodhisattva path. So the next thing we're going to do is we're at a life transition point, and what we'd like folks to do is just sort of think about which of these sort of hit you in some way. And we'll just give people a little time to reflect. And we're just going to go around and ask people to just, like, 1 minute, a couple of sentences on this one hit me, this line just made me realize I'm always doing one thing. So just a really short thing, and then we're going to do a follow-up from that. So it's not the only time you get to talk, but I want to give everybody a chance just to sort of say, this is the place that hit me. And we're going to talk a lot more about it.
Does anyone need a pen or anything? I'm always scribbling on my papers. Get a few.
I'm willing to start, just model it. So the one that hit me just now is this Chalakyagvan in the middle of the second page. The idea of we're trying to manipulate the outcome of our endeavor instead of paying attention to the activity itself. That we're not here now because what's going to happen? So that hit me. Do you have one, Roberta?
Well, I like the repetition of not thinking about the result, but thinking about the present moment, how you're doing things.
So which particular one hit you up?
I probably Pema. Mm-hmm. And, one of the deepest habitual patterns that we have is to feel that now is not good enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's such a classic for me, and to not give ourselves credit for who we are in the present. Mm-hmm. If only I was better.
Okay. So just like a quip, which one hit you?
I'm going to say that the one, abandon all hope of fruition. Could also say, give up all hope, or give up, or just give.
You like that?
The shorter, the better. Give is what struck me.
Uh-huh. Someone else? Yeah, Matthew.
I thought the Chagin Trumpa had the most sense of humor. And I thought they were pretty funny about the clubs and being an egomaniac. It's just, his sort of idiom was different. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that it was more personal rather than just stay in the present. It was about improving yourself in a way.
Roslina.
So when you first read the slogan, before you even handed out the papers, when you were saying what the slogan was, I thought of the text from the Bhagavad Gita. Oh. And then when he gave us the papers and we came out to this part, and I was like, oh yeah, it's here. It's called Karmanya Vadikaraste Mahapaleshu Kadachana. That's the actual in Sanskrit.
Uh-huh.
And the meaning is here, which is don't think about the fruit, just about the action and the effort.
Mm-hmm.
So that caught my attention because I had heard the original.
Oh. That's great. Anyone else? Harry Bob.
To me, it's in that fruit, number 28 months, from the third to fourth page. And to me, I substitute my words because I think there's so many attempts to describe what it's not.
Uh-huh.
Then I have to use my own words. So to me, it's make no demands. You know, try whatever you want, but don't demand what is to happen.
So is there any one of these that you felt like I came close to that?
Yeah, the one in what Lena mentioned about the Bhagavad Gita was your right is to work never to the fruit. So don't demand the results.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And also the thing that always blows my mind about the Wang Zhen, I can't place the pursuit. It's all about doing something better. So they're trying to contradict themselves as far as I see. They say don't try to do anything better. But yet the whole thing is to be better. So I don't know.
I don't know if I agree with that.
But I appreciate that.
One of the things we talk about, which is really important when we encounter Dharma, is don't try to change. So, in other words, attempting to change suggests that you're trying to be somewhere other than where you are. And at least following the path that we've established through our meditation practice, which is based on trusting that we learn through our actual experience of meditation, that change is going to occur on its own without our having to get in the way of it. But the important thing is our attention to the moment as it is, things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's, because this is all suggesting something and we're trying to get somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And we're not really willing to be here. So, you know, being here means totally being open. So I think Pema said it, you know, on the nail when she talked about it in terms of just basically giving up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have another way of looking at it, which is surrender to what's really here in your awareness. And either way,
mm-hmm.
it's just understanding. I think from the point of view of the path, we're giving up ground. We're learning how to just let go of all of our expectations and continuous projections we bring into situations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael. So you like that? Is anyone we haven't heard from or had one that?
Well, that was the line that struck me from Pema's, was one of the most powerful teachings of the Buddhist tradition, is that as long as you're wishing for things to change, they never will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As long as you're wanting yourself to get better, you won't. As you have an orientation towards the future, you can never just relax into what you already have or already are.
Mm-hmm.
Chill.
That's hard to accept, really, you know, in some regards, but when you think about it, I mean, that's very reassuring in some ways, too. Like Michael was saying, you know, let it be.
There's an interesting Zen slogan that sort of parallels this. Want what you have, not what you don't.
Mm-hmm. Brian, did any of them hit you particularly?
Yeah, quite a few things, but our task is to do the very best we can, not knowing what the consequence will be, not knowing if our efforts will make any difference whatsoever. So letting go of the results, it's like you just do the best you can. The other thing, one of the other things that stuck out, it's really about trying to stay in the present, trying to go like being in the past or being in the future, like holding on to stuff, just being wherever you're at for the moment.
So, I'm looking at where it says 28 at the bottom.
Yeah.
As a way of contradicting by way of how he, what he makes manifest in his presence. The slogan means that you should give up possibilities of becoming the greatest person in the world by means of your training. In particular, you may quite impatiently expect that because of Lojong practice, you will become a better person. You may be hoping that you will be invited to more little clubs and gatherings and so on. And yet, he makes sure that such opportunities like little clubs and gatherings are right there for you to fall into.
Bless you.
Thank you.
They're always in the presence of what he's doing. So it's thrown in your face very directly.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else been in here? So now we have. I think we can just talk some more.
Can I? Yeah. Sure. Say what I really like again, and I didn't. I'm glad, Lena, you said it. I was so impressed by the Bhagavad Gita thing. Your right is to the work, and never the results, the fruits of your action. I love that. You know, you have a right to work, and that's it. And I also really like the David Loy. You don't have a right to give up. That's in there somewhere. I'm sure where.
Well, I didn't. So yeah. One thing we did, and sort of, we had, you know, we planned this, and part of planning for a Buddhist talk is you don't know which way it's going to go. So we sort of had two paths, and I think we're going to go just with the large group path.
I have the longer.
So some, yes,
6 copies of that.
Yeah. So some of these are literally all that was in the book, and then the Pema. And the David Loy, and I think one or two of the others, are part of a longer piece. So we have those, but I think maybe for now to just talk about what people have here. What, and so anyway, I mean, even now, just to reflect on where has this, you know, come up for you or something recently, long ago. I'm going to say, I know for me, the Pema really hit me, that sense of that we're not good enough. Now is not good enough, and that we're not good enough. And that idea, like you said, Harry Bob, that we should be better. And I like the way Michael explained that it's... or what was the thing that Suzuki Roshi said? You're all perfect just the way you are.
That you could be better.
But you could all use a little improvement or something like that. So that idea of, you know, it doesn't mean you're perfect, that change, there isn't possibility for positive change. But I like the way you said it, Michael, that it's seeing what's there, and that the change is going to come. And it's being sort of aware, I think, of when you're doing things like, if I'm going to change, which way am I changing? What am I going to do here? And I think that's where the compassion comes in, is a skillful means of, like, if I'm at this point, things are going to change. How do I decide which way to go? How do I see what's there and what needs to happen? How do I open my heart so that I'm not going down a path where I'm causing harm.
I think one of the things you brought out to me, Elise, was in one of the longer things we copied, was about the archer never hits the goal by focusing on the target, which is the result. You know, the archer, if he focuses on the target, will miss the goal all the time. But the task of the archer is to focus on his posture and how he holds things and doing the task. And in that way, he'd hit the goal. But to focus on how we're doing things. You know, in doing, making your efforts sincere and heartfelt.
Is there another word to substitute for hope? It seems to me hope is quite inadequate as a what wants to be offered as human endeavor. Or being present is about the only alternative. Is there some kind of maybe the Tibetans have a word other than hope? Is hope a poor translation? I don't know how to say it. But it seems to me...
I'm trying to think, Harry Bob, because I heard something recently that someone said, and I liked it, and I'm now at that point in my life where it was a great idea that I couldn't tell you what it was. But I need some piece of...
This is a poem, right?
So it's the Dickinson poem.
Hope is a many splendor perhaps.
Oh, hope is the thing with feathers.
Hope is the thing with feathers.
Yes. Perches in the soul.
Yes.
And sings without words and never stops. Something like that.
Yeah.
Hope is the thing with feathers.
And that's why I kind of...
Perches in the soul.
Like, yeah. Hope is so important. So when it says... When you know what you're saying about kind of like... You do want to hope, right? Hope is so like central to our existence.
So positive.
So that's why I also find like someone says abandoned hope, are they, is it something else they need to say?
Well, not abandoned hope, an abandoned hope that you're going to get the result you want.
Yeah,
so it's so often we say, I'm going to do this thing, like my husband has a friend who's suffering in a lot of different ways, and one of them is health related. And part of it is that he's not eating well, he's drinking too much, like lots of different things. And my husband keeps thinking he's going to figure out the way to change the way the friend is acting. But he can create, and he has come up, I'm going to do this, and then he'll see, and he'll be better. And it was interesting, because at some point the friend posted something, like if your friend, that almost said literally, if you have a friend who is suffering, what they really need is for you just to be with them as they are. And I was like, honey, he just told you what he wants. Like that's like the, you know, bodhisattvas spend their lives trying to figure out what is, well, how could I help this person? How could I help that person? And this person said that, and it was really hard for my husband, because he thought he, like, we think we know how to fix things, and they're, we have this thing, and when we're done, that will, it will be better in just this way.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts, and one is I recently started working with homeless people again, and most of them are addicts and alcoholics, and you know, pretty much nobody gets better. I mean, we just are with them, and you know, a lot. What we do is we watch people get worse and we bury them. I mean, you know, not literally, but somehow, I mean, there's, you know, no hope for improvement. And I guess to hope is something I've thought about a lot over the years, because Linda and I have both worked in hospitals where people are getting worse, like with Huntington's disease. They're not going to improve. And to just be with them, with their suffering, not to try to fix it.
Kind of like Mother Teresa.
Pardon?
Kind of like what Mother Teresa was doing.
Yeah, if you can just be there. Don't leave them alone with it.
Show up.
Show up. And just to be present with them. And I also have thought, you know, over the years, like someone said to me one time, well, my brother has cancer, but we have a lot of reasons to hope. And I kind of think that isn't what hope is. I think hope is what you have when there is no hope. Sort of, you know, I don't know. I mean, I went through a long depression at one time, and, you know, I did better when I gave up hope. You know, I'm not going to hope for this to be cured. I'm just going to live with this. And it did start to get better.
You have to read Pema's second paragraph again, right? About as long as you wish for things to change, they never will.
They don't, yeah, yes. It's.
On the last phrase, as long as you have an orientation toward the future, you can never just relax into what you already have or already are. So to be with what's here, like Michael said, and where is that, what's the next step from here? Where am I being present as opposed to I know how I'm going to fix things? And the piece from David Lloyd, this book, Ecodharma, is really talking, it's a fairly new book, about what do Buddhists bring to the climate crisis. And for me, this has been really hard, and I do like this last line, our task is to do the very best we can, not knowing what the consequences will be, not knowing if our efforts will make any difference whatsoever. So if we think it has to make a particular change, then we're setting ourselves up for disappointment. If we think I'm going to do the best thing I can, and, you know, and with other people and being with other people, that's what we can do. And I think that's actually, you know, but I think it's true for life in general. I think it's really quite a powerful summation of
trying not to have expectations.
Yeah, well, not requiring that this is only satisfactory for me, this is only a good idea if I get this result. And if that doesn't happen, then I don't know why I did this.
Well, it was like going to the Women's March 3 years ago, right? And it's like, you know, I'm one of hundreds of thousands of people who are, you know, marching or hanging out on, you know, the lawn in Washington, D.C. And, well, what is this really doing? What is this really doing? You know, my feet are sore, I'm cold, I don't have the right jacket on. You know, is Jesse going to be impeached? No. What, you know, what is the result? Why am I here? And the answer is because it was important to me and I just needed to be there. I needed to be with other like-minded people. So I'm kind of like thinking of it that way too. Like, you know, if I was just thinking of the results of my action, of just being there, I would never have gone. And, you know, if nothing else, it helped me and helped people around. You know, I mean, I felt like I don't know, it's hard, you know, it's hard to sit back and it's hard to take action. And but I think expecting a result is yeah, we can't expect results. Just have to do it. Do what we want to, you know, what we think is the right thing at the time, and that's it.
It's kind of sacrifice. The thing that's kind of reminded me is sacrifice. I don't know if that's.
In what sense, sacrifice?
You're willing to do something, and I guess, I don't know if it's exactly what sacrifice, but like you're willing to do something, you know, you're not going to. You don't know if you're going to get, letting go of the results, you don't know if it's going to accomplish anything. Like, just to, like, I guess just like she said, just being present and being like-minded people, just trying to, you know.
Well, I think that it's not that there aren't things that are consequences of your actions. It's just that requiring that they be the thing I want. So I think there are incredible consequences from the Women's March and those events that nobody could have said, like, oh, this will happen. You know, but lots of things do happen. So it's there. Your actions affect other people, other things. And you can't know. And you may never know what the impact you had on someone, but you did. I mean, I even think about, like, I've been teaching for over 40 years now, and I'll occasionally have, like, somebody I taught years ago who was a Facebook friend, like, you know, post up, like, I remember when Miss Gittleman did this, and it showed me that I could be a different person and do more, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even know that. You know, I just was, you were willing to do it, so I asked you to do it. And so I think that piece of we can't even know the results of all our actions, but we can't require that, again, it be what I wanted.
I have a neighbor who's 89 and was a first grade teacher and then a vice principal, and her first grade students still visit her. It's really wonderful, you know, they appear. You know, not that many of them, but the fact that any of them come back at this point in her life is really wonderful. And some of them, you know, tell her she was important. And there's a guy down the street who visited from Florida, visited his family, and she kept him back in first grade, you know, made him repeat first grade, and he yelled off his porch, "You kept me back!" She yelled down, "I made you what you are today." Just, I live in that kind of neighborhood, which I like.
I'd like to ask a question about a hidden fruit demand or something like that. In the very last paragraph, sentence by David Lloyd.
Yeah.
It says, this phrase always, you know, bothers me in this way. To do the very best we can. To me, that's a judgment, and to me, a judgment can be really a demand. So it's a fruit that it encourages us never to have a right to your fruits. That was two or three paragraphs up. So our task is to do the very best. So right there, quit judging. And I think to avoid judging is perhaps a major thing.
So, I mean, but I think, you know, I'm just thinking about like something I did today that I had a student I'd thought about was like struggling, and I have a test in the class tomorrow, and I thought, oh, I should offer that he could, like, he was tired and he's not feeling well, he could take the test another day. And then I thought, oh, I forgot to do that. And as I was walking out of the building, I thought, I need to tell him that now. And I stopped and sent him the message. So it's like I had this good intention, I needed to follow through to, you know, alleviate the suffering that I saw. So the very best we can, I mean, maybe it's a funny phrase, the very best, like in this moment, what do I feel like I should do? You know, should I do A, should I do B, should I just keep walking down the street? You know, like I see someone struggling and I'm in a big rush. What's the best I can do? Well, what I'm rushing to do is take care of somebody who needs me, then hopefully somebody else can help. If my big rush is I really wanted a big iced latte, and I'm really craving that, maybe the better thing is to stop and help this other person. So it's sort of looking and seeing between all the options we have, which option, again, seems most useful in the moment. Seems to work best without like spending every moment of our day checking, like, was that an A+ good thing to do, or is it only a C- activity?
I think you can't beat yourself up for not doing, or it's easy to beat yourself up for, I should have done this, I should have done that, I should have, you know, saved this person, I should have driven to Kentucky to, you know, something. But I mean you can judge if you want, but
I think also it's the pace of our society. You know, I think we're criticized for being go, go, go people. And it's the idea of go max, you know, maximum, put the pedal to the metal. And oh, I could have done more if I didn't sleep, something like that. So I think there's all kinds of angles to it. And I think it's indeterminate. It's the best I can get to it. To me, the magnificence of the path is that there are so many alternative, if you want, possible favorable ways that you just can't determine the best. And we can drop never to judge the best as the best, because it's an unreachable thing. And I think the notion of perfection, I know there's a common phrase, something about we're not perfect, but it motivates us, you know, to try to be perfect. And I know there are a number of psychologists here who probably agree that that's sort of guaranteed frustration, because you know you can't always, you can never reach perfection. But on the other hand, if you don't practice, and of course, sitting down and meditating is practice, as if we practice it to be present right now. We don't practice so that I can tomorrow be present.
Right.
And it's the experience of being present right now, I assume, is really the fruit of meditation. But anyway, I'm just saying that it's kind of an embedded
judgment.
Frustration.
Yeah. Well, I think also to say the very best we can is, if I'm really tired today and I don't have much here, maybe the very best I can do is go home and take a nap. You know, that might be the best thing. Like, in the moment, like, every moment we're confronted with, what do I do now? Do I show up to meditation? Do I go home and go to bed early? Do I, you know, all every day. So it's sort of like, in each moment we're choosing. And we choose and we do. And it takes us somewhere. And
our faculties are also different at different times of the day.
Yeah.
I may be sharper in the morning and make a better decision, and when I'm tired I may make a bad decision. Mm-hmm. So my best can, not that, but like what I'm trying to do can also depend on other things.
Yeah.
And maybe not just my intentions, but like there are other factors that play into it.
I think once you've acted, you know, to let it go. I mean, if you've done your best or haven't done your whatever, to let it go and not beat yourself for what you didn't do, or, you know, try not to judge others for what they didn't do. Or, you know, unless you're a teacher, you can give them a B or a C. Hard.
You know, this sort of reminds me, when I was working in vocational counseling, we saw people that were in recovery, you know, and I remember, you know, some of the things were just so simple, like this, like keep it in the day. And one guy said to me, he said, well, you know, I've been drinking, I've been picked up 120 times in the South End, you know, drinking, whatever. And he said, one day I just had enough. You know, and some of those things, when you have power, because I think they're simple, you know, it's not a lot of words you have to figure out. You know, somebody else, like in AA, might say, well, man, keep it in the day. Yeah, and they all know what it means.
Just one day at a time.
One day at a time. Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
Progress, not perfection, comes to mind for me.
Yeah.
Perfection can't be attained. It's like you can only make, you know, hopefully make improvements.
You know, like you say, you know, progress along the path. We're progressing, we're not achieving, we're not doing this so we can get a result down the road sometime.
Yeah, we don't. the result would imply that we're on like, it's not like when you go for a hike in the woods and they have the three paths and they tell you what they go to. You're like, oh, if I go this way, I will definitely, you know, unless there's a major earthquake, from here I'll get to that place, from here I'll get, you know, I'll get to the pond, I'll get to the river, I'll get to the bridge. It's not that kind of path. It's like, here's this step. When you take the next step, you're at the next place. It'll take you somewhere, and there's no knowing what it is. And if you did nothing, you would go somewhere as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not like...
That just happened on this equinox...
Solstice.
Solstice walk, because... if you take this path, you do get to where most of the people are heading up. If you took this path, you might have headed off something which you don't want to head off, because they're going to come through unexpectedly, and you really don't know which one is going to work out. And it was very interesting, because it was a brilliantly lovely day. Somehow something rather happened. Again, not what was expected.
Any last thoughts?
No. Perfect is the enemy of good. I always think when people talk about perfection.
So we're going to finish up, but if anybody wants, like I said, this, we have a larger copy of several of these, so Roberta and I can put those out if people want to take some of them to read them, since otherwise they're just pieces of paper sitting in our houses. They can be pieces of paper sitting in your houses.
What do you mean by a larger copy? Do you mean this more expanded, like more?
So these are like, some of these are just excerpts from like a several-page piece. Yeah. So we have copies of those, so we can put those out and people can take whichever ones inspire them.
Yeah, this is like, I have a copy of...
So basically they have what is in here and something.
And more. So this is like Pema's is several pages and the David Loy is several pages. And there's one or two others that are a little longer. So we
make... the David Loy one?
Well, you know, we'll hand them out after.
Yeah, they're really... Oh, okay. Yeah,
we'll just put them out and people can grab
the ones you like, maybe, if you like that author, maybe.
Yeah. We'll put it up afterwards. We'll finish up, and then people who want to go don't have to watch us hand out papers.
No. Okay.
This is school teachers are tired. So we're going to do the dedication of merit. Did you grab? So let's see. This is the dedication. This is actually. You can have that. I think you may have. So this is, we usually start meditation session, and with this dedication of merit.
And the idea of the dedication of merit.
So you read this before you meditate?
The four dharmas, yeah. So we all chant
the four
it together.
Dharmas are in advance. That's sort of like opening with, you know, thinking about blessings to encourage you to be engaged with dharma, meaning understanding the nature of your mind and understanding how to achieve a sense of clarity about your life and what we're doing here, what we're about. So we start with that to help us motivate to practice. And then when we finish, we have developed some sense of merit with meditation. And so we dedicate that merit so it's not just for us alone, but going out to all beings.
Well, I guess what I was trying to say is the front part I read before I meditate.
Right.
That's right.
So we'll dedicate the merit.